This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing As Good As It Gets. That's not a commentary on the movie. That's what it's called. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss?
Yeah. Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one March Is Going to the Dogs movie. In the month of March, today we are doing As Good As It Gets. That was, well, before we get into that, I am here with my co-host, the most glamorous. She is not As Good As It Gets. She just keeps on getting better, Miss Tamara Cosio.
God damn it, that was good. Shit. I have nothing except that I am here. I mean, I have something. I have my wonderful co-host across from me, Corinne Edding.
Yay! I love you. I love you. And this movie was suggested to us by the good folks at
the podcast That Aged Well.
Yes.
Erica and Paul.
Who are fantastic. They have banter for days, and they go over the rom-coms and the serio, the very, very serio movies, all before the year 2000.
More or less.
More or less.
And they are amazing, and you should give them a listen because they are hilarious. I'm working my way through their catalog right now. I think the last thing I listened to was Footloose.
Oh, my gosh.
The movie Footloose.
Oh, I have to listen to that one. Everybody loose. Yeah.
It's so funny, though, because you never realize the movies that you grew up with and how fucked up they are. And so, like, in hindsight, listening to their podcast, I'm like, oh, no wonder why I was so screwed up. Oh, that makes so much sense.
Oh, I fully blame all of my romantical notions on the movies that I was raised on. I'm like, okay, I understand why I was just totally messed up with how I approached this whole thing.
Molly Ringwald did me dirty. Damn it. They always have the comment on that podcast where they're like, oh, this scene in this movie probably turned a lot of people gay. Molly Ringwald in most of her movies fucked up my relationships for the first 15 to 16 years of my life. It's not her fault, though. It was mostly John Hughes.
Yes, I was going to say, it's actually John Hughes' fault. Molly Ringwald was like, yeah, I tried watching one of these movies with me in it with, like, my daughter. And I was like, no, no, okay, awkward.
But that's not what we're doing. We're not doing a old movie. Well, we're doing an old-ish movie. I think it was the 1998 that our movie As Good As It Gets came out.
Yeah.
And I remember enjoying it immensely and watching the Oscars with bated breath because it was the same year that Good Will Hunting came out, which I also really enjoyed and was one of my late 90s faves.
Mm-hmm. Well, this movie, I scripted it out. It's very long. And it took me on a journey for, I mean, I had seen it back when it was out in the theaters or whatever. And it just took me on a journey. And I will tell you that I think this movie shows you that there's more than As Good As It Gets. Because it can get better.
Yeah. Was it last week when we were talking and you were like, oh, yeah, that movie with Jack Nicholson as a disgruntled, angry white man. And I'm like, you got to be more specific than that, because I'm pretty sure that was the majority of his roles. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I said misogynistic, homophobic, and racist. And you said, yes, you said, yeah, that's a lot of his movies. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you're totally right. Oops. Yeah, I've been traumatized by Jack Nicholson in the past.
But he does it so well.
He does. He's very good at
it. Yeah, he does do it well. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Or what, you should fix it, because that's not As Good As It Gets. Gonna be saying that a lot this whole episode.
Dropping the wisdom. Okay, but I have a...
Thank you.
I have a super serious question to ask you, Miss Tamara.
Oh, no.
Did you do the synopsis? Because I forgot to, like, put your name there and, like, lovingly state something to you.
Yeah, I did. I did it at work, like, 10 minutes before I left, because I was like, wait, am I supposed to do that? I am. She did put a nice little reminder or little sparklies by it with my name. And I was really hurt and let down, but I went ahead and did it anyways.
Well, you know, when BetterHelp becomes our sponsor, we can use them to help work help us work through this issue.
Right. Or a part of me, a small part of me was just like, maybe she wants me to not have it done so she can call me out on the podcast because she's done it so many times and she wants to drag me down in the mire with her.
No.
Plus, forgetting to do the synopsis.
It would be my fault because I didn't even put your name or initial next to synopsis. So,
yeah, just a big blank space that said, figure it out.
Yeah.
But I did.
Use your powers of deduction. Yeah. You're the one who wanted to be a detective, okay? Okay?
Oh, wow. Well, then, I charge $25 an hour, so you owe me $6.50. Wait, $25 an hour to be a detective sounds kind of low.
I know. I was like, you need to charge more than that.
Wait. No, but I could be like one of those detectives that goes on stakeouts for like 17 hours at a time. And then it would be like $25 plus overtime. And I undercut myself in the pricing and I'm trying to justify it. And I should just let it go. I should just admit that's how much I value myself. Damn it. Anyways, synopsis.
We're giving you a raise. It's all good. Mm. Synopsis.
Yes. At least a spiritual raise, if not a monetary one. Melvin, played by Jack Nicholson, is an eccentric, infuriating, self-centered author whose arch nemesis is, well, everyone. But when we first meet him, it's Simon, his gay neighbor, played by Greg Kinnear, and Simon's dog, Verdell, the little bearded wonder that would just as soon lift his leg on you than look at you. Melvin also suffers from a touch of OCD, which requires he have lunch every day at his favorite cafe, where his favorite server and crush, Carol, played...
A touch of OCD.
I was trying to be nice.
Okay.
I was being... Hey. Who wrote the synopsis? I know you don't know because my name wasn't on it, but that would be me. Where his favorite server and crush, Carol, played by Helen Hunt, is forced to wait on his surly ass. One day, Simon's apartment gets broken into and he gets gravely injured. This causes Melvin and Simon's worlds to collide and forces Melvin to accompany his neighbor to Baltimore, where he will attempt to get a loan from his estranged parents. Melvin asks Carol to accompany him because he tells her, quote, he's afraid Simon will slip him the stiff one eye, but secretly he wants to get to know her better. To Baltimore! Woo-hoo. Will Melvin stop all the Melvinness that alienates and offends the world and win Carol's heart? Will Simon indeed put the moves on Melvin and make Melvin realize that his whole existence has been miserable up to this point because he was denying his true passions? Find out with us as we journey with Melvin, Simon, Verdell, and Carol to see if this is as good as it gets.
Ooh.
Corinne, do you want to get us started on As Good As It Gets?
Oh, I am ready for this journey, this road trip, this adventure and experience.
It is March is going to the dogs, which yes. Is also why we chose this movie, because it has a very, very, very cute dog who plays a big role named Verdell that we mentioned before.
Yes. Speaking of Verdell, we open the movie on Verdell, a cute Brussels Griffin breed of dog. And if you don't know what kind of dog that is, it's a small brown-haired, almost terrier-looking dog. If you have a better description, Tam, I'm totally open.
Looks like an Ewok with a beard.
Great. Perfect. Ewok with beard. Is hanging out in the hallway of the apartment complex and about to pee on the beautiful tile and baseboards when we see our hero, Melvin, played by Jack Nicholson, valiantly trying to coax the dog into the elevator so it won't pee in their hallway. When that doesn't work, he picks the dog up, chastising it, commanding, "You will not pee in the hallway!" But Verdell will not take orders from this man, and as he's being lifted up in the air, he releases a stream of pee, creating a golden shower for the hallway. Melvin has had it and chucks the dog into the garbage chute. Problem solved.
That is kind of fucked up, though. You are in a high rise New York apartment. Your dog has to go outside, so you just open your front door so he can handle his business in the hallway.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm like, dude, take the dog out for a walk. Like, do not leave your indoor hallway. Ew. Nope.
And I know we don't say it anywhere in the script, but this is Simon's dog. Simon has a lovely apartment.
Yeah.
Outside of Simon's apartment, he has this huge, like, balcony situation with a greenhouse art studio. The dog can go out there.
Yes.
Where you can smell the urine instead of the whole building.
Exactly.
Just saying. I'm saying that, yes, Melvin is a hero in this part. Even though you put a question mark, we don't know how fucked up he is. So in this moment, yes, he's a hero.
I would say it is not Verdell's fault, and putting a dog down the garbage chute is a bad idea. I thought this is fucked up, you were going to mention that, but I agree with both things. Both can be true.
Okay, no, I don't mean that the whole not putting the dog in the chute, that wasn't fucked up, but like trying to save the hallway.
Yes.
In whatever misguided way, I don't think he should have put the dog in the chute, but I'm just like, both of y'all are wrong in this situation. Both of y'all.
You're just traumatized from the pee palace that is your apartment right now.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm twitching. Yeah. That's it. I feel very strongly about this. Leave me alone.
Two puppies in an apartment where the people don't take the puppies out is not necessarily the best.
No.
Ugh. As a matter of fact, it's almost like your living area is the indoor hallway of the apartment complex.
That's something too soon, too close to home, too close to home.
Oh, no. You're like, where's the trash chute? Where's the trash chute? Just then, Melvin hears a voice calling. Verdell? Verdell? It's Simon looking for his dog, who he dumps into the hallway to go to the bathroom. Totally not cool. Melvin tries tucking away into a staircase.
Oh my God. Sorry, my knee-jerk reaction was a little bit premature because you were about to say all that stuff too. It's my nerves. Sorry. It's my nerves.
It's fine. No. It's fine. I feel very strongly about it as well, and I completely agree. But Simon sees him. Have you seen Verdell? Melvin plays it cool, channeling a different angle to, oh, Feb, no, you didn't, you worry. He tries to play innocent, saying, oh, why, Melvin, why? Why do you have me saying these things, Melvin? Why? Oh, the colored man I see hanging out in the halls? Simon is all full of what the fuck. No, my dog. And which color was that? And Melvin doubles down, doing an Uncle Remus imitation, and yeah, love this section, not uncomfortable at all. Simon calls over Frank, who is played excellently by Cuba Gooding Jr. Melvin, meet Frank. I believe you know he deals my art. Melvin grins. I just don't care as long as you keep your fly zipped up around me. Because Simon is gay. It just keeps getting better. Frank is about to share a piece of his mind with Melvin, but Simon pulls him away. He's not worth it. And they walk back to the apartment. Melvin yells after them, hope you find Verdell. Love that dog. And Simon turns around, eyeing him suspiciously. You don't love anyone, Mr. Udall. And they part ways.
Oh, Simon, played by Greg Kinnear, does an excellent little hair toss, like a faux hair toss as he walks away. Like,
yes.
A saucy exit. He gives good saucy exits.
It would have been nice if they'd had like a gay actor playing the role, but I have to say that he does, Greg Kinnear does a great job.
Yes, it was the 90s. They probably didn't realize that there's a lot of gay actors out there that can act gay.
What?
Yeah. Oh, how far we've come. Melvin goes back to his apartment, switching on and off the lights 5 times each, locking locks 5 times each, throwing away his leather gloves, washing his hands under unbearably hot water with a fresh bar of soap, throwing that bar of soap away, and unwrapping another one and washing some more. I believe Mr. Udall may have a touch of OCD. Or, as Corinne would say it, a whole lot of OCD.
Yeah.
A whole lot. Later that day, Melvin's working on a novel and Simon is having a party. It's in full swing with lots of colorful characters milling around admiring Simon's art. The maintenance guy named John stops by because he found Verdell. Simon is ecstatic. He buries his face in Verdell's fur, kissing him, and he asks, "Where did you find him?" John chuckles, "In the basement garbage bin, eating diaper shit." Simon's face falls because the man was just watching Verdell lick all over his face. Mm. John turns to leave, but Simon stops him. "Oh, one more thing. How do you think he got into the basement? He couldn't have gotten down there even if he got on the elevator." John thinks a moment and says, "Oh, maybe some nice neighbor shoved him down the garbage chute." Simon's brain hamster rolls out the bulleting board and connects one very short red string from Verdell's picture to Melvin's picture and one more short string from Melvin to the trash chute. And he is heated. Ooh. He storms to Melvin's apartment, banging on the door, interrupting Melvin's literary rhapsody. And when he answers the door, Simon asks him if he dumped Verdell down the trash chute. Melvin does not answer. Instead, he berates Simon for the intrusion. "How dare you interrupt me while I'm writing? There's no reason why you should ever knock on my door. If you hear my body thud on the floor and there's an uncontrollable stench days later, not even then should you knock on this door." He makes some derogatory gay remarks and slams the door, leaving Simon teary on his step. Frank witnesses the whole thing, including Simon's retreat back to his apartment. And he kind of stoically says, "Oh, that'll teach him to pick on me ever again."
Yeah.
Oh,
I know.
Poor Simon.
Poor Simon.
Oh. Simon! Simon! Melvin tries settling into writing again. When there's more banging on his door, Melvin rages, "Oh, now you're going to get it. Now I'm really pissed." He throws a door open and doesn't have time to react before Frank grabs him by the lapels and forces him into the hallway.
Yeah.
Melvin starts to freak out. No, don't touch, don't touch, don't touch. But Frank doesn't care. He backs him into a corner and gives him the royal fuck off. "You think you can get by with intimidating everyone? Well, you don't intimidate me. I grew up in hell, motherfucker. My grandma has more attitude than you." Melvin yells, "Police!" And he's got an insult for everyone. "You donut-munching morons, help me! Help me!" And I myself can imagine many of Melvin's neighbors probably hear this, recognize his voice, and instead of calling the police, are looking through their peepholes excitedly, hoping to see him get his ass whooped.
They got their little pocket popcorn that they're just like,
yeah,
"Me? Okay."
Hit him! Hit him! Frank opens his arms wide, corralling Melvin further into the corner. "Shh, shh, 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 shh." Melvin jabs his finger towards him. "Assault and battery, and you're black." But Frank isn't fazed. He hisses at him. "I like Simon. I like him enough to obliterate you if you verbally abuse him or so much as touch that dog again." He pauses, regaining his composure, and his anger seems subdued as he continues. "In the meantime, I'm going to think of a way for you to make it up to him." And then he gets yelly again. "I hate doing this. I am an art dealer." And this art dealer needs to go back to the party. So he skips back to Simon's apartment, clapping his hands. "Okay, party, party, party," he sings as Melvin watches him go. He is shooketh.
he doth be shooketh.
He doth be shooketh.
Good, Melvin. You should be shooketh, fucker.
Mm.
This next section I entitle... Melvin is also anti-Semitic, and Carol goes on a date. We find out that Melvin also leaves his apartment building, braving the outside world, when in the next scene we see him yelling at people, "Don't touch me!" And hopping between the lines on the sidewalk, he makes his way to a diner where he makes a rude comment to a couple sitting at a table and then walks up to the counter and we see one server, Carol, touch Melvin as she passes by because he is blocking the server's path. And he says nary a word. What is this witchcraft? When he informs her that Jews are sitting at his table, the two people he made the rude comment to on his way in, Carol informs him that he'll have to wait until they are done or go sit in another server section. The other servers gasp, "No, no, no, no." And they don't have to worry because Melvin isn't trading the section. The
everybody like drops their plates and stops, the whole restaurant goes silent, and they stare at Carol like, don't you fucking dare, bitch. Not today, not ever.
You know, I think that Carol deserves a raise for dealing with Melvin, quite honestly.
Yes. Yes. I did all kinds of soul searching because I was like, how can she put up with him so well? And everybody else is like, fuck that guy. I hope he dies. And I was like, well, we'll get into it. Because she has the hugest patience with him. Mm-hmm. And he is super rude.
Yes, he is. Melvin isn't trading Carol for anyone. She's his server. He stands over the couple, glowering, and then makes anti-Semitic comments to them. Yay!
I'm surprised he also doesn't get a punch in the face.
Seriously. They decide to leave. And Carol's boss man informs Carol that if Melvin ever does that again, he's banned from the restaurant. He should have been kicked out of the restaurant at least temporarily for that day for pulling that bullshit. Regardless, Melvin is a happy camper. He's got his seat, and he pulls out his plasticware from a Ziploc bag. Carol lets Melvin know that if he ever treats patrons like that again, her boss man isn't going to allow him in the restaurant anymore. Melvin doesn't acknowledge this, but he does order 2 eggs over easy, 2 sausages, 6 strips of bacon and fries, a short stack and coffee with cream and sweetener. Carol ribs him for his choice of food. You're going to die soon with that diet, you know that? Melvin gives her a calculating look and says, we're all going to die. I'm going to die, you're going to die, and it sounds like your son's going to die soon as well. Carol's face falls. Melvin glances up at her and realizes what he's done, but doesn't say a word. Carol is saying words, though. Take my son's name out of your mouth. Say what you want about me, but if you ever say anything about my son again, you will never be able to eat here again. Understand? She looks at him intensely. You need to acknowledge that you understand or leave now. Do you understand me, you crazy fuck? Do you? He pauses in fidgeting with his plasticware. Yes, I understand. And she leaves to get his motherfucking order. Woo. Carol is played by the excellent Helen Hunt, and she does a fantastic job in this movie as well.
She won an Academy Award for it, as a matter of fact.
Well, I don't know who else she was up against, but well-deserved is what I say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This role wouldn't have worked with a lot of people, but she makes it
yeah,
work.
Yes. There's some moments where, like, that one where she got enraged at him, and then after he says he understands, she like brings the 10 back down to a 4. Mm-hmm. And is like, okay, I'll go get your order now.
Yeah,
you crazy fuck.
She's like, but just so we know, I'm serious here. Okay.
Yes, I will cut your tongue out of your mouth if you ever say my son's name ever again. Mm-hmm. And serve it to you on a plate right next to your 6 strips of bacon, fries, and coffee with cream. You get me, bro? You get me?
Gentle listeners, remind me never to cross Tamara. That evening, Carol returns home from her date. With her date. Her date, who is very invested in getting in her pants and uses the oh no you didn't-uary move of licking her forehead sensually in the middle of kissing her. Now, I know how you feel about forehead kisses, but how do you feel about forehead licks, Tamara?
Way worse than forehead kisses. Way worse. I was like, is there something wrong with you, sir? Are you having an episode? Why is your tongue on her forehead? I'm not understanding what's happening. I went through like all the scenarios where this would be okay. I'm like, is she overheated and you need to inexplicably cool her down? Does she have something on her head that needs to be licked off immediately? I couldn't think of anything, and I was just, no, no.
I definitely think, like, now I have this vision of him being like, I know it's one of those hot New York summer nights. And he, like, licks across her forehead and then whips out a little fan. Whoop, 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 whoop,
whoop. Oh, that might be kind of charming, I guess. Or, you just look so delicious, I have to taste you. Okay, you could do that, but not with the tongue on the forehead. Not with the tongue. There's other places you can lick. Forehead's not one of them.
No.
Just saying.
Just say no to the forehead. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
However, in spite of the passion that the forehead lick induces, they are interrupted by her child coughing in the next room over. Carol puts her makeout sesh on hold to check on her son. Her mom is apologetic. Don't worry about a thing. We've got it covered. Go back out to your date. But Carol takes a moment to spend a little time with her son, who throws up a bit, but is generally doing okay. No fever. She comes back out and the guy tries impressing her with his up-close magic. No, not impressed. Unless you're pulling like $100 bills out from behind my ear and giving them to me, not impressed.
Unless you're making your tongue disappear off my forehead, no, not impressed.
He starts making out with her again, but abruptly stops when he puts his hand on her boob and encounters some throw up on her top. She tries to wipe it off and move on, but he's out. What a mensch.
Yeah. This is a little too much reality for a Friday night. Now I have a question. Why didn't they just go to his house? He's pretty well dressed. I'm sure he might have a better living situation than she does. So I'm wondering if Helen Hunt, a.k.a. Carol, really didn't want to get down and dirty with that guy secretly in the back of her head and was trying to sabotage it.
I don't think that she really thought of it as a possibility. I thought, you know, she's like, oh, I'm just going to take this guy. Like, this guy's going to just take me home and he'll drop me off and it'll be fine. And then she got caught up in the web of passions and she was like, what is this? Because she's just so used to doing the day in, day out mom and dealing with Melvin thing, you know?
Yeah. And then her vagina like reached out and was like, oh, no, you're not going anywhere. Wait, you're kissing my forehead? Yes, you can. You can leave now.
Vagina, take the wheel. No, don't take the wheel. Vagina, don't.
Next, we see Simon's quote unquote friend named Carl driving around town talking on his phone to a guy who has theater tickets. But Carl can't go to the theater until he finds a model for Simon. What's a guy to do when he wants to go to the theater but has to work? Why, he picks up a male sex worker from a corner where he's picked up other guys in the past. But this time he needs one with a pretty face. Vincent, played by Skeet Ulrich, knows he's the pretty boy of the trio of friends he's with on the corner and waggles his eyebrows to seal the deal, and he does. The next day, he shows up at Simon's door, ready to get down and dirty, shucking off his clothes as Simon leads him to that marvelous outdoor studio that's on a vast patio, perfect for dogs to pee on, not in the hallway.
Glorious. Glorious greenhouse studio. Fuck that shit. How much does that apartment cost? Because, oh my gosh, dying.
Simon turns around to see a half-naked Vincent, and he pumps those brakes, informing his freelance model, oh, this isn't a nude. And a slightly embarrassed Vincent, who thought he was there for a nookie, puts his clothes back on and tries to figure out then what the heck is he doing there. He tries posing sexy, and Simon is confused and begins to question Carl's choices because usually he hires professional models that are easy to work with, not men trying to twerk for a pose. Simon explains to Vincent that what he actually is looking for is he needs to capture the moment when you see a person and they just seem more realer and more alive, not by doing anything specific. You just look at someone long enough and you discover their humanity. He looks into his faux model's eyes and Vincent is touched. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's been a while since he's felt vulnerable like this, and a more tender look flashes across his face and his self-consciously runs his finger through his hair. Simon is inspired. That's it. There it is. Hold it. And the painting begins. Coincidentally, he does have all his clothes on. Still. If I were Simon, I'd let him pose naked before looking for his humanity.
Yeah. Look, we just put a little fig leaf over part A and a couple little pasties over part B and C, and we're all good to go. Humanity attacked.
Across town at the diner, Melvin is cheesed because Carol has been serving him, but she hasn't been as friendly as she normally is. He tries getting her attention in various ways, including gargling coffee. And after she's taken care of everyone and everything humanly possible in the dining room, and I wouldn't be surprised if she was scraping gum off the bench outside before dealing with him, she ultimately returns to Melvin's table and, seeing his plastic dinnerware on the table again, suggests that he trust in the diner's clean silverware. It's part of the fun of eating out. Melvin says he's seen the people working there and it's a judgment call. Fuck right off, Melvin.
Also, he puts his plasticware on the dirty ass tablecloth. I mean, I know they wipe it down in between, but it's not like he has like a little, his own little hygienic placemat that he pulls out. No, he puts it right down. I'm like, ugh. I understand. Like, OCD is has levels where it's like, this is okay, but this isn't. This is okay, but this isn't.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah. He switches gears and asks what's wrong with her son. And Carol explains that he has vicious allergies and the smallest thing turns big because his immune system is shot from being sick so often. So he ends up in this emergency room 6 times a month with whatever 9-year-old they just made a doctor. Melvin quietly asks what his name is and she tells him Spencer. She stands there for a moment and her face softens as she adds, Spence. He finally realizes that this is her sweet spot. Show interest in her son instead of commenting on his potentially early demise and you might win. And Melvin responds softly, okay. A couple of weeks pass, and Simon is in the final stages of Vincent's portrait. In the studio, Vincent's acting really squirrely. He's blasting music, looking around nervously, trying to distract Verdell. Simon doesn't notice it until he lets Verdell out, and there inside his living room are Vincent's other sex worker friends, attempting to rob Simon's apartment of anything they can carry. He realizes what's happening and asks Vincent, why are you doing this? But he doesn't get an answer because the biggest intruder grabs a coat rack and starts violently bashing Simon with it until he's motionless on the floor. Their plan thwarted, the three robbers flee. Who calls the cops? Surprise! It's Melvin. And who takes care of Verdell while Simon's in the hospital? Melvin! That one, however, was because Frank threatened him and called in his you dumped Verdell down the garbage chute and that was not okay favor.
Yeah!
Frank is in a mood. He's so tired of Simon, who has the soul of an angel, being shat on. Frank dumps Verdell in Melvin's apartment, and Verdell scampers all around. And Corinne writes, I'm wondering if he found a way to mark his territory. Melvin is unsettled by having Verdell in his apartment. However, he feeds Verdell a Verdell-sized portion of raw meat with 4 pieces of bacon sticking up out of it, which is fair because I think that that bowl of dog food probably cost a good $75 because it was full of prime rib and bacon. But I don't even want to know what's what that's going to do to the pupper's poop. But hey, I'm not the one cleaning up after it. And again, with Corinne's banner writing. Verdell is at first hesitant to eat. Wonder why? Possibly from all the times he's tried getting rid of him. And then, so Melvin decides he's going to sit down at his piano and serenade him, singing, always look at the bright side of your life.
Ooh, yeah.
Halfway through the second chorus, Verdell starts slowly shimmying towards the bowl, and eventually he eats.
Aww. Simon was hospitalized for a couple of weeks and had so many stitches in his face that he looked like Frankenstein's monster, in addition to the bruising and black eyes. His paintings aren't selling, he has no insurance, and he's drowning in medical bills. Things are rough for Simon, and they are even more rough for him when he gets his dog back from Melvin, who makes nasty comments about how Simon looks. And Verdell is very reluctant to return home with him. Once inside Simon's apartment, Verdell waits over by the front door, rejecting Simon's treat with a distinct thought bubble over his head. I want the bacons, man! Simon's assistant, Jackie, played by Yeardley Smith, actually, I don't think it's Simon's assistant. I think it's, what's his name's assistant?
Frank?
Frank's. Yeah, I think it's Frank's assistant. I don't know. Anyways, played by Yeardley Smith, the woman who voices Bart Simpson, sits down and has a conversation with Simon, letting him know that he's broke, owes $61,000 in medical bills, and should call his parents for help. And as things stand, he won't be able to keep his apartment and studio. Simon.
Travesty.
I know, that apartment and studio are gorgeous. I would spend so much time out on that deck area with the... Oh.
I think you just live on the deck area and rent out the rest of the apartment to somebody else.
Real. Simon tries to get Verdell to come to him, but Verdell is missing Melvin. Way to kick a guy when he's down. Simon conjures an unsettlingly good imitation of Melvin, which I can't do a great Jack Nicholson, but...
Try.
What's the matter? You miss the tough guy? Well, here I am, sweetheart. Happy to see me, you little pissant mop? How about another ride down the chute? Verdell initially looks hopefully up, but sees it's just Simon and is sad again. Fuck all.
I know you cut it for length and time, but there was a really, really sweet moment before he gave Verdell back where Melvin goes to the diner with Verdell and sits him outside. And when they leave the diner, ultimately, like, he's walking Verdell down the block and obviously something's changed between him. He starts warming up to the dog, especially because Melvin's walking over the cracks in the sidewalk. And he notices that Verdell is also avoiding the cracks after him. And he's like, don't you be like me. Don't you be like me. We're going to get you home. We're going to get you something good. Get you some bacon. So there was like a few little sweet moments between playing always look at the bright side of your life and giving Verdell back that makes Melvin really fall for this absolutely adorable pup.
Yes. And they definitely bond with each other. And he, I would say he has a kind of, Melvin has kind of an unparalleled relationship with Verdell because I don't think he's been able to have that kind of a connection with anyone or anything. And and so I think Verdell kind of starts opening him up a little bit in an interesting way. But all that
and
got
Verdell
cut.
Knows it. That's why he's like, oh, that's my bitch. Melvin, I got you right here between my paws.
Yeah, but all that got cut up out because the movie's fucking 2 hours and 18 minutes long.
I know.
No. I'm glad you brought it up.
Because it's also the movie poster. If you ever seen the movie poster for As Good As It Gets, it's Jack Nicholson holding up Verdell in the air. And that's when he was like following him and avoiding the sidewalk cracks is that moment. And he's like, you don't be like me. Don't be like me.
I like how he's invested in not passing on his neuroses onto Verdell.
Yes. You realize how you are, Melvin.
Yeah. He's not like, good, Verdell, you're doing things right.
Yes.
But I will tell you, I bet Melvin is taking Verdell out to go to the bathroom instead of just punting him out into the hallway.
Oof. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Melvin is going through it. As Sam says, they had created quite a bond, and he's missing Verdell, something fierce. He's bonded with him over the past couple of weeks, and having him go back to Simon creates a cascade of shittiness for Melvin as well. First, he realizes that maybe therapy will help. So he goes to his therapist's office, which totally makes sense. But he hasn't been there in a couple of years and demands help. His therapist refuses to see him on the spot, letting him know that, Melvin, you need an appointment. And the therapist holds firm, eventually driving Melvin out into the lobby, where he expresses what is on every therapizing person's mind to the room full of people. Is this as good as it gets? And he leaves. At least he can have lunch at his diner, but he can't. Carol isn't there. The server touches his plasticware. What? And boss man kicks him out because Melvin was being horrible to his server, insisting on Carol and refusing to move until she got there to feed him. Totally normal, totally natural behavior. Nothing to see here. Like, completely justified.
Yes, I know every time I don't get served by Helen Hunt at any restaurant, I freak the fuck out. And rightfully so.
As well you should. We all want to be served by Carol, a.k.a. played by Helen Hunt, because she's amazing. The entire diner collapses as Melvin leaves, but Melvin salvages the situation by bribing a busboy for Carol's last name, Connolly, and he's off to find Carol. He shows up at Carol's apartment, somehow manages to navigate the many cracks in the penny tile on the floor. Oh, forget about navigating penny tile floor cracks. Yikes. And greets her, stating, "I'm hungry. You've ruined my whole day. I haven't eaten a thing." Ah, Carol isn't having it. "This is my private home. Fuck off. Do you have any control over how creepy you allow yourself to get?" Melvin keeps an even tone. "Yes, I do. I haven't gotten personal with you, but just you wait. He will." He continues, "But you have. Are you sick? You don't look sick. Just tired and bitter." There you go.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah. We just got a little personal. Spence comes out and Melvin asks him how he's doing. When Spence doesn't respond, Melvin chastises him. "You should respond to your elders when they ask you a question." Carol has had enough. She pushes Melvin out the door. "You, of all people, don't get to teach my kid about manners." And she slams the door on him. She turns her attention back to Spence, who isn't feeling well. And it turns out he's got a fever of 104.9. And that's not a radio station. That's a bad fever. I didn't know this, but a fever of 104 is potentially dangerous, and 105 requires immediate medical attention, or at least that's what Google says.
Carol, it just means you're hot.
Oh, what's your temperature there, sexy Miss Tamara?
I'm a sizzling 104.9.
K-T-A-M. Ooh. Stay tuned to hear how hot K-Tam is. Carol grabs her kid and hustles outside to the corner to catch a cab because Spence actually has a fever and not a hot, sexy radio station. K-T-A-M. Where she runs into Melvin, who has just gotten a cab. She takes the cab and Melvin rides as well. But as opposed to the situation in Something Borrowed, where two stops turn into one, in this case, Melvin's one stop turns into two, where he ends up footing the bill for Carol and Spencer's taxi ride to the hospital. Do we feel bad about this? Absolutely not. When the cab stops at the hospital, Melvin pops out of the cab and yells after Carol, "Any chance you'll be at work today?" Carol has zero fucks at this point. "No, stay away from me, God," she yells as she rushes Spencer into the hospital.
God, Melvin is absolutely out of touch. She is rushing to the hospital with her son, who has a 104.9 degree fever, and asking if she's going to be at work again. Oh, sure. When he gets down to 102, I'll pop right in and serve you eggs.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Priorities in order.
Yes. Or you know what? We'll just stay here and I could just fry a couple of eggs on top of my son's fucking forehead because he's just that hot.
There you go. See? I don't know why she didn't just keep him at home and like do a... a fucking, like, souffle or something on his forehead.
Oh, probably just not at the top of her priority list, I'm guessing.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Melvin, in an attempt to get Carol to come back to work, goes to his publisher to ask for a big, big, big favor. We don't hear what the favor is, but she says she'll try. After she says those magic words, he gives her the royal brush off and then is rude to the front desk girl who idolizes him. She's practically vibrating as he's waiting for the elevator and asks how he writes women so well.
Ugh.
He practically sneers and tells her, "I write women by thinking of a man and taking away reason and accountability." Room to talk, Melvin. Room to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Later, Carol is coming home with some groceries and she sees a car parked out front of her house with MD on the license plate. She panics, rushing into the house and finds Dr. Betts and her son, who seems perfectly fine. But before she sees her son, she runs in and she's like, "What? What is it? Hi, I'm Dr. Pitts." "Not your name? I don't need your fucking name. What's wrong with my son?" This is another Star Banner performance by Helen Hunt. "What are you doing here?" she demands after she sees that her son is fine. And Dr. Betts explains that his wife is Melvin Udall's publisher, and she asked him to take care of Spencer because Carol is urgently needed back at work. And asks, "So what do you do for a living?" She rolls her eyes. "I'm a waitress." And Mom in the background says, "In Manhattan." Dr. Betts doesn't have much time to process this when his nurse comes in. He hands her some tests that he needs to have the results for that day. And Carol is floored. Same day results? What is this? Carol and her mom then proceed to go over Spencer's medical history. The doctor asks if Spencer's primary physician did some basic allergy tests, and Carol relays that they said it was unnecessary. Dr. Betts' face says otherwise, and Carol blurts out, "Goddamn H&L bastard pieces of shit!" Remember, she's in the presence of a doctor and apologizes, but he doesn't mind and says, "Yeah, I actually think that's their technical name." Dr. Betts lets her know that there will be lots of expensive tests, but Melvin is footing the bill. But regardless of that, whatever he finds, he assures her that Spencer will start feeling a lot better. After he leaves, Carol talks with her mom. She does not want to deal with Melvin and accept this gift, but her mom, Beverly, pushes back to accept this help because this is not the type of gift you give back. This is life-changing. And Carol reluctantly agrees. Meanwhile, across town in Manhattan, Simon has to let Nora, the housekeeper, go. She's crying as she leaves when she suddenly realizes, oh, who's going to walk Verdell? Simon is an up and about, and much to his chagrin, they realize they need to ask Melvin for another favor. Nora knocks on Melvin's door, and he happily accepts walking Verdell, which is surprising. Nora gives him the keys in case Simon's sleeping and says that 2 p.m. is a good time, and if you can, open his curtains for him to see the sunlight so he can know all of God's beautiful work. Melvin has been amiable before, responds dryly, "Where'd they teach you to talk like this? At some Panamanian hump hump bar? Go sell crazy somewhere else. We're all stocked here." And slams the door on her face.
Ugh.
Across the hall, Simon's trying to salvage his life and is making the final call on the list he has of friends to ask for money. He's talking to Carl, who, Corinne rightly puts, motherfucker owes him at least $61,000 for putting him in the position that he did. But Carl doesn't agree and says he can't help.
Fucker.
Melvin comes by to pick up Verdell for his walk and comments, "Ugh, this place smells like shit." Simon rolls away defeated. "Please just leave me alone. I'm not feeling very well." But Melvin pushes, "What happened to your queer party friends?" And Simon turns, tears in his eyes. "There's nothing worse than feeling this way around you." Melvin responds, "You're a disgrace to depression. You'll be back on your knees in no time." Ugh. To which Simon rolls back to Melvin, leaps from his chair, and socks him in the face. "Are you enjoying this? I'm losing my apartment, and Frank wants me to call my parents, who haven't even called me when they found out I was in the hospital. And I don't want to paint anymore. The life I was trying for is over, and I'm feeling so sorry for myself right now that I'm finding it difficult to breathe." He slips into his Melvin imitation. "But it's high times for you, Melvin. The gay neighbor is terrified. Terrified, you absolute horror of a human being." Melvin's idea of bonding is misplaced at best when he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I was trying to give you a boost."
What? Yeah. And then he
actually does something
legit
nice.
"Hey, I have a pep talk for you, Tam. I have a real good pep talk."
No. Oh, you go ahead. I'm just going to press mute real quick and go ahead.
Wait a minute there.
Yeah. I'll just read the good advice on your facial expressions and not have to hear any of that.
No, because that way
I can just ad lib and talk for you. "Tim, you are the best person in the whole wide world. I'm so lucky to do a podcast with you. You're amazing. I'd be nothing without you. Here's a piece of bacon."
No Melvin inspired pep talks, huh?
No. I mean, you can. I just won't hear it. I will be ad libbing. The part of Corinne for this pep talk will be played by Tamara. You just don't know it.
Great. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Then Melvin actually tries to do something legit nice that ends a little heartbreakingly.
Oh.
He confides in Simon. "You know why Verdell likes me so much?" He pulls a baggie of bacon from his pocket and waves it in the air, which instantly gets Verdell to come close. "Bacon, here." He hands Simon a piece. "Call Verdell over." And he does. Simon tries calling Verdell, waving a piece of bacon. Verdell, come to daddy.
Oh.
Melvin tries gesturing for Verdell to go over there. Go to Simon. That way. But Verdell comes to Melvin anyways. And Simon quietly says, "Can you please leave now?"
Oh, so heartbreaking. And it was even more heartbreaking because Melvin was actually being legit nice. Like, he's gesturing for Verdell to go over to him, like, in a way that, so that, that Simon can't see. And it's...
Yes.
And still, ugh.
I just want to know what happened in that apartment between the two of them that he is denying his former owner, who's an absolute sweetheart, who is holding a piece of bacon. Sweet owner and bacon.
Well, you see, singing is quite the temptress.
Okay.
Yes. It's how I get all the men's, all the nut zero men's that I, yeah. So, never mind. Okay. Never mind.
You.
Yeah.
I got you. Yeah.
It's late at night and Carol can't sleep. She hastily puts on some clothes and goes over to Melvin's place. She wants to make it absolutely clear to him that she's graceful. She is very graceful, but she's grateful, but she's not ever going to sleep with him. He responds, "Next time you're going to tell me you won't have sex with me, do it at 9 a.m. And if you want me to, if you want to thank me, write a note. Are you going to be working tomorrow?" And I'm guessing she will be.
She's obviously really, really, really wants to talk to him because she goes to his house in the pouring goddamn rain with nothing but a t-shirt and jeans on and no bra. And I'm sorry if this is objectifying, but Helen Hunt has wonderful boobs because you can see them clearly through the wet t-shirt that she has when she gets to Melvin's door. And I was like, holy hot damn, that is a nice pair.
And well, she done, looks Helen down Hunt. And sees her nice pair of boobs with headlights full on. And she's like, whoop. And she covers the tatas with the hands.
Yeah.
A couple of days later, Melvin has invited Frank to the diner to talk about Simon and Verdell. Melvin tells him that Verdell's stomach is out of whack. He threw up twice last night and the vet says it has something to do with his diet. Huh, you mean a diet of bacons isn't a great idea for a dog?
And prime rib, Corinne. You forgot the prime rib.
Right, and primed rib. Let's try that. Mm-hmm. Let's try that diet out with Melody. See how that goes.
I don't want to die. No, I don't want her to die, and I don't want to die.
Carol interrupts them, bringing some food to the table, and hands a very thick envelope to Melvin. It's a thank you letter. The Moby Dick of thank you letters. One that she spent hours on the night before and fretted greatly over. But in true Melvin fashion, he doesn't want to read it and hands it back to Carol saying, "No, thank you, no." She leaves confused and shaking her head. Frank punches Melvin on the shoulder laughing. "You're making the rounds. Simon says you brought him soup last night," and we flash back. To Melvin coming over late at night to Simon saying, "Here's some Chinese soup." He plunks it on a bench. They both sit on the bench and have an odd, brief conversation about depression and not being able to sleep. Then Melvin gets up. "Good talk," he says, and leaves. Back in the present, Frank says, "You know, Simon needs to get to Baltimore tomorrow to ask his parents for money, but I can't take him. I'm going to be meeting a high-maintenance painter tomorrow, so I'm out. Can you drive him? You can borrow my car. It's a convertible. Do you drive?" Melvin bellows, "Like the wind, but I'm not doing it." Carol comes by bringing more food, chastising Melvin. Getting loud. Melvin explains, gesturing to Frank. "He wants me to take his car and his client to Baltimore." And Carol lays into him. "I want your life for 1 minute where my big problem is somebody offering me a free convertible to get out of the city," and walks off. Frank digs Carol and says under his breath, "Go ahead, girl." And then, much to Frank's surprise, Melvin says, "I'll take Simon." And then asks Frank to leave because we don't like each other that much. "See you tomorrow," he says, as Frank swiftly departs, saying over his shoulder, "If there's some foundation that helps people like you, please let me know." Carol looks at Frank, who's leaving the diner, and asks Melvin if he needs anything else. Melvin looks at Carol with a maniacal twinkle in his eyes. "Yeah, I'm going to give my queer neighbor a lift to Baltimore." And then he asks, "Is that help I gave you working out for you?" And Carol seizes the opportunity to tearfully thank him for changing her, Spencer's, and her mom's life single-handedly. She apologizes for things she shouldn't apologize for and reads select chunks of her 10-page thank you letter. He then goes in for the big ask, holding her thank you and what he's done for her over her. I want you to go with me on this trip. I can't do it, and I need you to protect me, you know, in case Simon comes on to me. She initially says, as Tamara put it in the opening, something about a one-eyed monster or something. Yeah.
That's what I like calling it. That's the only reason why I felt like it should be mentioned.
Gentle listeners, I toned down the miserableness of Melvin throughout this because I just don't want to say all the horrible things that he says.
The stiff one eye. The stiff one eye.
Yes.
Larry, come over here and bring me the stiff one eye. Bring the stiff one eye with you.
Carol initially says no and states several reasons, but he's not taking no for an answer. So it's off to Maryland. For Melvin, Carol, and Simon. Verdell is being boarded. This is going to be an interesting trip. And we'll find out what happens on that trip after the break.
And we're back. The morning of the trip, things start out great. Melvin introduces Carol and Simon outside of their shared apartment building in Manhattan. He introduces them respectively as Carol the waitress and Simon the anti-gay F-word. Carol insists that Simon sits in the front seat as he needs more room because he's still very much injured, and Melvin selflessly moves his seat forward to give her more room in the back, but puts his seat so far forward that he can almost basically steer the car with his penis.
Whoa, hello. Hey, banner riding there. Thank you, Tam.
Simon and Carol are surprised, but they are in for more surprises as the journey goes on, like Melvin creating several mixed CDs for the road. He starts off with the first one, which is labeled to use as an icebreaker mix, but he has other mixes for other occasions like get things going or for use to pep things up. It's a 5-hour drive, and halfway through they switch and Carol starts driving. Melvin is sitting curmudgeonly in the back seat as she tells Simon that maybe his crappy beating-slash-losing-it-all experience was meant to happen to bring him back to his parents and create closure. Simon doesn't know how to feel about this, but Melvin does. Nonsense! And you want to know why? He chirps from the back. Carol announces, anyone in this car who wants to know what Melvin thinks, raise your hand. And Simon makes sure his arms are as low as possible. He actually kind of shoves them down even lower.
Yeah.
Carol asks Simon about the situation with his parents and decides to pull over so she can give him her undivided attention. Melvin, not like having the attention diverted from him, tries intruding on his story, on Simon's story, with his own of crappy abusers at the hands of his dad, who, according to him, didn't leave his room for 11 years and thwacked Melvin's hands every time he played a key wrong on his piano. But Carol shuts that shit down, and Simon reveals a slightly touching and very awkward story of how he's always been artistic and his mom was very supportive of his art. She would post nudes for him to paint. Simon didn't realize that his dad didn't know about this, and one day his dad walked in on them, mom naked and Simon painting her, and lost it. Simon tried reasoning with him. She's not naked. It's art. But his dad's response was to beat him unconscious because, as he says, my dad knew what I was before I did. And after that, his dad, aka gay. His dad talked to him less and less after that. And the morning Simon left for college, his dad walked into his room with a big sweaty wad of money and said, never come back.
Which I'm like, you would think that it would be less of an issue that he's painting mama nude if he's gay. Because then there's absolutely nothing sexual going on there whatsoever.
I don't think it was the sexual thing. I think he was just like, I'm going to use this as an excuse to beat my son.
Yes.
Beat the bejeebus out of my son because I know what he is and it's a disappointment. And I'm trying to find a reason to take it out on him. Because I imagine that Simon doesn't give him a lot of reason to be cross because he's such like a mild-mannered sweetheart.
Yeah. And I'm sure a big people pleaser, like, I'm sure he wasn't like, I'm going to rebel.
Yeah. It was like when Melvin slammed the door in his face and he was like, that'll teach him to cross me again.
Yeah.
Like, oh, burn. Sick burn, Simon. You better tone that down, buddy. Oh, anyways. And with that, Simon says, and I turned to give And I turned him and I hugged him and he turned and walked out. Carol kisses her fingers and gently touches the side of his face and says tenderly, "We all have our terrible stories." And Melvin, who's been itchy with jealousy over the attention, interrupts, "Not true. Some people have amazing, wonderful lives with boats and friends and noodle salad. No one in this car, but most other people. And what makes it so hard is not that you had it bad, but that you're pissed that they had it so good." Good friends, noodle salad. Carol and Simon firmly disagree. And Melvin, who's still feeling spicy, says, "Fine, tomorrow we'll go see if you can get another sweaty wad of money out of your dad's hand." Ugh. And they head off to the hotel.
And sometimes you can have it hard and have good friends and noodle salad. Just saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can have good times, bad friends, good noodle salad. Good friends, bad times, bad noodle salad. It can go a myriad of ways.
Yes, but as long as I'm like, I'll take good friends over noodle salad any day. I'll just take the good friends.
Depends on the noodle salad for me.
Oh, okay. I see how it is. Well, gentle listeners, this
a noodle salad that I would replace you with, but I'm still, you know, there's might be one out there. I'm not sure.
Next episode will be hosted by Tamara and a bowl of noodle salad.
My macaroni has a first name. It's C-O-R-I-N-N-E. My macaroni has a second name. It's E-D-I-N-G.
That was actually really good, you dork.
At the hotel, they're in some kind of banana sa. Thank you, Corinne. 3-bedroom suite that has flowered wallpaper and brass fixtures everywhere. It looks like Laura Ashley spun around in a hurricane of old lady inspired flowered and lace and created a very vintage looking suite. Mwah! Banner writing. While Simon is opening his suitcase, Melvin stands in the doorway and asks seriously if Simon's ever gotten an erection over a woman.
Ugh.
Simon gives him a "Are you really asking me this, motherfucker?" look. And Melvin explains himself, "You know, because it might be really hard being gay and all." Simon counters, "Right, because it's so easy being you?"
Yes!
Melvin concedes. Fair enough.
Zing, Simon, zing! Later, Carol is looking out her window at the beautiful view of the marina and talking with her son, who is doing so much better he's out of breath, but not because he needs to go to the hospital, but because he scored a goal playing soccer. After she gets off the phone with her kid, she bounces into the main room of the suite and exclaims that her son is doing great. This is cause for celebration. And Melvin and Simon need to take her out dancing. Well, Simon immediately nopes on out of that, which leaves Melvin, who reluctantly agrees.
I was always curious because when she asks him, she's like, "Come on, Simon." He's like, "No, I don't feel like it." "Come on, Simon." "No, I'm really, really tired." "Come on." "No." Just like the time, like his claws come out a little bit because she won't take no for an answer. But I was like, I wonder why he was so adamant about not going out.
Well, I think because he was just feeling shitty and depressed, and then he has this whole parental meeting hanging over his head, and he just didn't feel like hanging out and having dinner with Melvin.
I'm like, that would be cause for me to want to go out, lose myself, dance my ass off, and drink tons and tons of alcohol with my new bestie, Carol, away from Melvin. He can sit at the table and watch us.
Carol gets dressed in a cute red dress with a V-neck, buttons down the front, and a full skirt. And waits and waits and waits for Melvin to get ready. He eventually comes out of the steamiest shower ever, wearing a nice pair of black slacks and a short-sleeved, button-down shirt, opening the bathroom door as a plume of smoke or fog or whatever, steam, that's the word, comes out. It's almost like that scene in Weird Science, where, you know, suddenly Kelly LeBrock is...
Yeah.
Except we wish it was Kelly LeBrock.
Even better if...
Yeah.
Or Jack Nicholson wearing a cut-off belly sweatshirt and some tidy whities.
Yeah, so, and a nice, like, little pair of bikini underwear. Yeah, perfect.
Or we have blue bikini underwear. Mm-hmm. Blue bikini underwear and a cutoff sweatshirt that shows his midriff perfectly.
Yes. Weird Science was part of my sexual awakening. Thank you very much.
Because of Kelly LeBrock?
Yeah, and like them lusting over her and like the whole thing. And I was like, I need to get a half shirt, sweatshirt action thing too. I want to be hot like her. Yeah.
Yeah, Kelly LeBrock was my girl crush, and so was Tawny Katane.
Oh.
When she was crawling all over that White Snake car. And here I go again on my own. Oh, no.
Okay, now I need to see that video. Hello.
Oh, yeah. He kept flashing to, like, the White Snake lead singer. I'm like, no, go back. Nobody wants to see you.
Tawny Katane was, like, the only... I've only seen her in like, you know, Celebrity Rehab or something like that. So
I have No.
I have not seen her in her prime.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Lord have mercy.
Yeah. So he does not come out of the steam in a cute little half shirt in a pair of bikini underwear, but he is wearing
missed opportunity.
I know. Totally missed opportunity. A nice pair of black slacks and a short sleeve button down shirt. But when they go to the restaurant, Melvin finds out he needs a tie and jacket to eat there. The maitre d', who is wearing a tuxedo, lets Melvin know that he can give him a loaner tie and jacket. Melvin is not going to be wearing some clothes that multiple people have rubbed their bodies all over. Fuck that shit. Nope. But he also doesn't want to let Carol down. Surprise. So he figures out how to make it work by having Carol wait for him at the restaurant while he races his car into town and stands in the doorway of the suit shop, refusing to go in, but points to a jacket and tie that will do and bless the heart of the guy who was working in the suit shop to put up with Melvin and his bullshit. But he does, and the next thing we know, Melvin's back at the restaurant.
Or was it the best case scenario because he basically like stood at the door and said, "That one there!" And he just handed him a jacket that probably cost hundreds of dollars and got a quick, sweet commission for 2 seconds of work.
Truth, truth. And you wouldn't want to help Melvin under normal circumstances.
Right. That would be like a 3.5-hour escapade. Mm-hmm. And don't touch me, but put this on, but size it for me and tailor, but don't touch me.
Yeah. Just use your powers of imagination and it better fit perfectly when it's all said and done. Helen is at the bar and the maitre d' informs Melvin that they have reserved a table for them, which is super nice. Melvin says that he can seat himself and watches as Carol chats up the guy next to her at the bar. Once Carol sees Melvin watching her across the room, she happily waves at him and grabs her drink to join him. But this place is so fancy that there is a guy designated to hold her drink while she walks to the table. She delights in the ridiculousness of this, sambaing across the room as the drink guy follows her with her drink on a tiny tray, zigging and zagging after her, doing a little dance with him to the left, to the right, woot-woot-woot-woot-woot-woot. And there is hope in my heart for this evening until Melvin opens his mouth.
Which is usually the case. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She pays Melvin a compliment on his new Luke and asks him to dance. And Melvin says, "I've been thinking about it, and no. Also, I don't get this place. They make me buy some new suit for this joint, but you, they let in a house dress?" Carol pops out of the chair she has barely popped into. "Pay me a compliment or I will leave. You have no idea how much your comment hurt me." Melvin hems and haws, but when he realizes that she's serious, he is resigned. "Fine, I will. Once a person knows you're important to them, they just try and hold it over you." Carol gives him the eyes and says, "This better be a good compliment or I'm out." Melvin agrees but insists on ordering first, yelling across the room, "2 hard shell crabs with 1 baked potato and 1 order of fries and a pitcher of beer." Random guy in a bow tie and a vest yells uncertainly back at him, "Okay, I'll let your server know." Carol hides behind her hair, embarrassed, but also knows she's with Melvin. How much can she really expect? His compliment to her is that because of her and wanting her in his life, he started taking these pills that might help him, and he hates pills. Carol is puzzled. "I don't get how that's a compliment for me." And Melvin replies, looking up at her, You make me want to be a better man. And while I'm yelling, run, Helen Hunt, a.k.a. Carol, run! Carol's face softens. That is the best compliment I've ever received. Melvin smirks. Perhaps I overshot my mark. I was just trying to compliment you enough so you wouldn't leave. Carol ignores his statement, asks him how the meds are going, and he says that it's a process and he's taking things a step at a time. This explains how he's been able to do as much as he has on this trip. And then Carol... No, Carol, don't do it. No, don't go into that dark house, Carol! Carol scooches over and dry kisses the shit out of Melvin. Not once, but twice. And then confesses that she thought he was cute when he initially walked into the diner until he opened his mouth. She asks him, Now that your soft little underbelly is exposed, why'd you bring me along? He's reluctant to share, and she looks at him hopefully until he says he brought her along so she might have sex with Simon, turning him straight. Oh, magical pussies, how I adore you. Carol is pissed, and Melvin tries backtracking, but she is out of there.
Back at the hotel, Simon has just gotten off the phone where he left a message for his parents, letting them know he's in town to see them, and he quietly begs, please pick up the phone. I know you're there. You haven't been out later than 10 your entire lives. But no one picks up. He says he'll call them again tomorrow, hangs up, and is ready for a quiet evening of deep sorrow and despair when Carol storms into the room. I'm sleeping here with you, she announces. I don't want to deal with Melvin, and I know he's not going to be coming into your room. I'm going to take a bath, order a shit ton of room service. And she notices that Simon's struggling with the shirt and starts trying to yank it off of him. She is on fire. Simon, noticing, also in pain, says, gentle, gentle, gentle. Carol realizes that she's on a tear and heads to the bathroom, running herself a bath while Simon settles into bed. He turns onto his side and sees her looking like a beautiful pinup girl sitting on the edge of her tub, their towel draped down around her. Suddenly, Simon, who had previously been looking like a shell of a man, is filled with light. He gets up from bed and grabs his sketch pad and starts to draw. Carol turns around and sees him self-consciously covering herself. What do you think you're doing? No, you can't draw me, Simon. I know it seems like I'm really confident, but I'm not. But Simon beseeches her, explaining, I haven't wanted to draw since the accident. And you sitting there? I have to draw you. You're so beautiful. Your long neck, your beautiful profile. You're the reason cavemen painted on walls. Carol understands and also feels flattered. She lowers the towel a little bit more on her back. Simon chuckles and begins to draw. For the first time in a while, feeling inspired and filled with hope. Meanwhile, Melvin's at the bar insulting the bartender and complaining about how he could have had sex with her tonight, but he blew it. You certainly did.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point in time, he says he was talking to either Carol or the bartender. I can't remember. But he was like, talking like this is exhausting. So him being a decent human being, not blurting out whatever like four-letter words and opinions he has about people is obviously a challenge and a challenge to him, which I kind of get. But
yeah,
that made me feel a little bit sad for Melvin. Like, he's got so much going on in his head that wants to just forcefully come out so hard, and he has to actively try to squash it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that was really well illustrated when he went to Carol's house and was like, I am practicing a lot of self-restraint right now.
Yes.
And I was like, you know what? He actually is practicing a lot of self-restraint right now. He's still a bastard, but like, I can see that. Yeah.
And I wonder how that rolls into him being such a great author, because he's got such a snarky, fucked up point of view, but he writes these people with these awesome qualities in such a way that like, endears enough people to make him a best-selling author.
Yeah.
Like, how does that happen? If you can't do teach or if you can't do write? But back at the hotel, there are better things happening than Melvin. Well, really, most things are better than Melvin, if we're going to be honest. Carol is laying out naked on Simon's bed, and he's drawn so many pictures of her. They're littered across the bed, sketches and sketches of her laughing and laying and sitting and smiling. Simon is back. He tears off the top part of his cast because he can't get the right angle on the paper with it. And both Simon and Carol are just so happy being in each other's light. It is gorgeous and beautiful and a very sweet moment.
Aww.
The next day, Melvin comes storming into Simon's room while Simon happily eats breakfast in the hotel's fluffy robe and accuses, "Did you sleep with her?" Carol comes out of the bathroom and also in a robe and is collecting every free item she could possibly can from the rooms. She glances up at Melvin and says, "No, we did something better. We held each other and it was amazing. He gave me everything that I needed." She gently ruffles his hair while Simon beams up at Melvin triumphantly and she leaves to get dressed. Later, Simon finally gets in touch with his mom on the phone and she whispers to him, so she won't get caught by her husband, that they were home last night and they did hear his phone call. But Simon has a newfound sense of clarity and confidence. He speaks compassionately to his mom, letting her know that he doesn't care about what happened in the past. He loves her and doesn't need anything from them anymore. He's going back home and going to figure some things out. And when he gets settled, he'll let them know where he's at. And then it's up to them to make the next move. And he really hopes that they do. Oh, the power of art. While Simon's on the phone, Melvin's trying to talk to Carol, but she is not having it. He speaks in a hushed tone to her about how Simon's going to be staying there with his parents and how they'll have to drive back to talk. But no, his dreams are dashed after Simon gets off the phone and bounds over announcing that he's leaving with them. He's not staying with his parents. He's going to go back to New York to figure things out.
Yay!
Carol has changed his life. She is just that good.
Yeah, she is. On the road again. Just can't wait to get back on the road again. The trio hits the road and while they're stopped at a gas station, Melvin calls Frank to check in. Carol runs from the convenience store. "I held up the place. Go, go, go!" Well, no. She's grabbed some gifts for her son and mom, as well as picking up a dorky USA baseball cap for Simon. This totally delights him. Melvin returns to the car and lets Simon know that his place has been sublet, stating, "You're homeless, but Frank has lined up a new place for you to temporarily stay." So, what you're saying, asshole, is that Simon is not homeless, as he does have a place to stay, fucker. Anywho, the threesome hits the road again, and Melvin pulls out a mix CD from the glove box labeled, "For Emergency Use Only." Bum, bum, bum,
bum. Corinne, what would be on your "For Emergency Use Only" CD mix if you were on this road trip?
I think it would just be Indigo Girls all the way. Inspirational.
Okay, Patrick.
Hey, I have a very special place in my heart for Indigo Girls as well. Thank you very much. My sister and I spent a lot of time with the Indigo Girls. Well, not the actual Indigo Girls, but with their music.
Well, you were hanging out with the Indigo Girls and I didn't know this? Bitch.
Oh, the lesbian affairs I was having. No, 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 no. So I would not choose Melvin's choice of Nat King Cole personally
for
emergency use. I have to say.
I agree.
Yeah.
10,000%. I thought it was an odd song choice.
I would do soothing music, but like more along the lines of Peter Gabriel or Bill Withers. He is who we need in our lives when we need a little uplift.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Bill Withers definitely would be for emergency use only mixtape.
Mm-hmm. But Melvin has Nat King Cole, who does have a voice like butter. I will admit that, crooning, "I love you for sentimental reasons." But Carol isn't having it. "I don't want to hear that one right now," she says, popping forward in her seat. At first, he refuses to turn it off, but he actually relents and does turn it off, which surprised the fuck out of me.
Control freak Melvin?
I know. Melvin goes to drop off Simon at their apartment complex and tries popping into his car. But you know, we've all had those moments where we thought that music would be like enhance a mood somehow, make things better. And instead, it doesn't. It like either falls flat or makes things worse. And you're like, where the fuck did I go wrong? Like, you think... Yeah. Putting on Sade to bang to, easy choice. It's just like smooth, simple, like not very distracting, kind of sultry. It'll work. But then you have some guy being all like, "Well, you're trying to love me up with Sade." And I'm like, oh my God, no. We aren't getting romantic. We're just getting it on. And Sade's an easy, smooth, loving person to get things on to.
Has this happened to you specifically, Karina?
I don't know what you're talking about. Nothing like that would ever happen to me.
Next time, try the Indigo Girls.
Yeah, that I'm sure that'd go over real well. What is this music you're playing? Unless they start singing along, good, in which, right? case you know they're gay. Maybe I should use it like play it on my bicycle as I ride through the streets as Lady Bait and find myself a good lady that way. That might work. And she might know how to harmonize, which would also be great because...
Oh, my God. That's all I want in life is somebody to harmonize with. Gender doesn't matter.
Amen. Amen. You know my heart. Oh. Melvin goes to drop off Simon at their apartment complex and tries popping into his car to give Carol a ride. But she is done with Melvin. Carol tells Melvin that she doesn't want to have anything to do with him anymore and insists on taking the bus home. Melvin and Simon go upstairs, and just when I'd written off Melvin as the giantest asshole ever, you find out that Melvin has moved Simon into his second bedroom. And even though it seems like a very special level of hell, it's also much needed for Simon. Plus, Verdell, the pupper, who is the entire reason why we are doing this practically 2.5 hour long movie starring an asshole, is thrilled to have the two of them together.
Mm-hmm.
Simon looks at Melvin appreciatively. I love you, he says. And Melvin essentially and kindly responds, I tell you, buddy, I'd be the luckiest guy alive if that did it for me. Which is honestly the best compliment I've heard him. Like the ones he gave Carol, I was like, meh. But that compliment, I was like, okay, that's actually him. Mm-hmm. Him kind of overcoming some homophobia and saying something nice to Simon. There, that's a good compliment right there.
He also overcame some homophobia when they walked in the door and after Simon realized what was happening and Verdell runs out like yipping happily to see both of them. He's like, that's right, Verdell, mommy and daddy are home. Melvin kind of stops but doesn't say anything, which I was like, good, Melvin. Good.
Yeah, yeah. Keep that on the inside voice. Inside voice. Melvin walks past Simon, reaches out his arm, hesitates a moment, and then pats him on the shoulder quickly before walking away.
Later, Carol is feeling some kind of way about how she handled things with Melvin and calls him, interrupting what was about to be a really unfortunate conversation between Melvin and Simon about Verdell, while Melvin essentially is going to say, I know he's technically your dog, but he's mine now. So I was like, did that happen? Did I miss that amidst all the Carol stuff?
Yeah, because what happened is that Simon goes into Melvin's room and Verdell is sitting on the bed with Melvin.
Oh,
and Simon's
right.
Like, hey, I know you're being all nice here, but Verdell is my dog and I'd kind of like him to sleep with me. And Melvin says, well, and he's about to like go, hate to break it to you, but Verdell is mine now, basically. And the phone rings, interrupting him about to say some things that he won't be able to take back.
Good timing, Carol. When Simon picks up the phone and finds out it's Carol, Melvin freaks out, shoves Verdell into Simon's arms, and tells him to hustle on out. Carol apologizes to him, but still isn't sure what she wants to do about everything. And Melvin actually says that, I should have danced with you. After he gets off the phone with her, he yells out to Simon in the hallway of their now shared apartment. Well, do you want to talk to me or not? Simon rolls with things and asks him how the conversation went. Melvin says, poorly. And so Simon gives him a pep talk. Sometimes you just got to forget about waiting for things to cool down. Go over to her place and talk to her. You have a golden opportunity. Melvin is unsure, and this time it's Simon who ribs him, puts on a Jack Nicholson voice and says, well, then forget it. Go to bed and I'll read you a bedtime story. This works for Melvin and he's pumped and hustles out. Right before he leaves, he stares at the door and Simon asks, what's the matter? Melvin matter-of-factly states, I forgot to lock the door, and heads out feeling a little out of sorts. he forgot to lock the door. Not once, not twice, not thrice, not four times, but five times. He forgot to lock the door.
A fifth?
Next, we see him on Carol's doorstep at 4 a.m., and Carol pops out to talk to him. But talking to Melvin is frustrating, and she eventually yells at him, "Why can't I just have a normal boyfriend?" Carol's mom, who's peeking her head around the front door, says, "Because no one has a normal boyfriend, honey. It doesn't exist." Carol sighs and invites Melvin in, but he suggests they go for a walk instead. And she asks him if he realizes how crazy that sounds because it's 4 a.m. He offers that they can go to the bakery. Then they're not crazy. They're just two people who are fans of warm rolls. She reluctantly agrees. As they meander slowly down the sidewalk, Melvin does what he does and tries avoiding all the lines. She stops. "You know, whatever this is it isn't going to work." He pauses for a moment and walks towards her, confessing, "I'm feeling better, Carol." She responds, "That's great, but I'm not the answer for you." And he forges on, "I've got a great compliment for you." Carol isn't into it, but Melvin gently insists, "Just let me talk. I might be the only person on earth that understands that you're the greatest person in the world. I might be the only one who appreciates how amazing you are in every single thing that you do and how you are with Spence. And you always say what you mean, and when you say something, it always means something. That's all about being straight and good. And I think most people miss that about you. And I watch them, wondering how they can watch you bring their food and clear their tables and never get that they met the greatest woman alive. And that makes me feel good about myself, that I know that you are." Carol's gaze softens. She chuckles and she's got little hearts in her eyes. And I'm thinking of planning an intervention, but Melvin doesn't care about this and continues. "Is that something that's bad for you to be around?" Carol looks at him earnestly and shakes her head, saying no. He smiles. "Well, I'm going to grab you." And then chuckles. I didn't mean that to be a question. "I'm going to grab you." He looks at her with hungry eyes and lays some really awkward dry kisses on her. He steps back, assesses Carol's confused look and says, "I can do better." Moves in for a more determined dry kiss that is better, if only because it's completely shrouded in shadow so we don't have to see it. Carol digs the kiss, and as they continue to walk down the dark New York street, a light pops on, illuminating the storefront of the bakery. Carol quietly says, "Warm rolls," and they walk inside, because sometimes something that seems crazy can look enticing in a different light if you're open to it, or if the enticing thing has a buttload of money like Melvin does. The end.
Hungry eyes, one look at you and I can't disguise. I got hungry eyes.
Hungry eyes.
Oh boy.
So, Corinne, what do you give As Good As It Gets?
All right. So, I give this 4 dry kisses. It is not super diverse. It does have Cuba Gooding Jr. in it, who is excellent. There are lots of great performances in it. I will tell you, though, why the fuck they tried to make it into a romance in the end is beyond me. I felt like they were really square peg round holing this. If they hadn't made it into a romance, it had just made it into a friendship, I would have been like, 5 motherfucking dry kisses. But instead, they're like, "Oh, wait a minute. No, we need to make this romantical." And I was like, I felt more chemistry between Simon and Carol than I did between Melvin and Carol. I felt more chemistry between Melvin and Verdell than I felt between Melvin and Carol. So,
yeah.
Verdell was fantastic. Excellent theme for March is Going to the Dogs. Also would have completely fit under the OFAB, ooh, no, you didn't, you airy umbrella as well. And I also like how it showed, which is something that a lot of movies don't show, is class inequalities. And so they're talking about healthcare and the problems that Carol faces in providing for her son and the difference in his quality of life, where he's always being rushed off to the emergency room. And like, can you imagine the cost of that all the time versus when he gets private care and he then can actually lead a functional life. It's kind of incredible. And so I felt like it had some really nice aspects to it, also showing an aspect of obsessive compulsive disorder and ostracization of family and around being gay. And I had a lot of nice different moments like that. And I really feel like it had such nice interpersonal moments as well. And it was interesting seeing the metamorphosis of Melvin from the beginning to the end of this movie. And I felt like it was done in a really great way. So, you know, all of that was crafted beautifully, and then you gotta go fuck it up with some like half-assed romance like stapled onto the end of it. It's just like, sweet baby Jeebus, when he's like, I feel really good about myself that I see that you're a good person, and she's like, oh, that's so hot, let me kiss you. Like, what the fuck? No, that's not romantical. But I understand how Melvin thinks that that's a compliment, but that's a different matter entirely. So, we need to get Carol some therapy. She needs some better help. Some intervention.
We're not sponsors, by the way.
I know. And that's where I end things. Four dry kisses. What about you?
I am going to agree with you and also give this movie four dry kisses. Ooh. Why you ask? It used to be one of my favorites. Like, my little 20-something self thought it was so romantic. And now that I get older, I'm like, oh, sweet baby Jesus. Like, I can see their whole relationship unfolding after this one night. And it is just going to be a shit show.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be hard. And it's going to be long. And it's, well, maybe not long. It might be short. But the performances in this movie are just exceptional.
Yes.
Like Melvin and Carol and Simon and Frank and all the other players. Like
Skeet Ulrich, I thought he did such a good job. It was his interactions with Simon and how their relationship changed over time was just really beautiful.
Yes. Agreed. Even Skeet had his moment in the sun. The complexities of the characters and their interactions and relationships, the constant navigating around certain things that keeps happening. And it's still like, I feel like this movie stands the test of time. I definitely see it through a very different lens than I did when I first watched it and loved it. But it still resonates with me, and it's still a very good sound movie. So I'm giving it four dry kisses. I'm giving Melvin and Carol's kiss at the end a half of that dry kiss because it just really, really sucked. Actually, that's probably going to be what's going to knock it down from 4.5 dry kisses. That kiss just, no.
Yeah.
Both of them, no.
Yeah, no.
-0.25, -0.25 for both of them. Knock it down to a solid four dry kisses.
I felt like we were in like Hallmark like territory when there's like, you know, there's some good Hallmark kisses and then there's some that are just like awkward and you're like, what is going on here? And I was like,
yeah,
that's a what is going on there Hallmark territory kiss right there.
Yeah. Pan the camera around so we can see the back of your head and just imagine what we think it should look like.
Yes. Patently unsexy. Ugh. Tamara's like, you can't see this, gentle listeners, but Tamara's like looking off and you can see her remembering the kiss and how patently unsexy it is and wishing she could unsee it. And I agree.
Yeah. Yes, because the first time they kissed, I'm like, oh, he was trying to make it look awkward and uncomfortable. Okay. And then they kissed again. I'm like, are they going to do it again and make it look less awkward and uncomfortable again? Or are we just going to keep having at it until it gets better? No? Oh, that's it? Okay. It's fine.
So with us not having the split verdict of Bridesmaid of one dry kiss to five dry kiss instead, we're actually on the same page with this one with four dry kisses. What adventures do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we are doing Lars and the Real Girl.
Ooh, Ryan Gosling and some real girl realness.
Mm-hmm. This was a Corinne pick. Korean Pick 101.
Yeah, because we are doing the theme in April. Free to be you and me. Bye. motherfuckers. Oh, yeah.
And there is nothing freer than carrying around a real girl doll to all your social functions.
Exactly. And we all know that I made up this theme because it doesn't have like a witty rhyming action thing to it. whereas Tam has all the palabras. So, you know, it works out much better.
What are you talking about? It rhymes. Free to be you and me.
Yeah, I stole that from Marlo Thomas. Yes. Of the Free to Be You and Me album. From the 70s.
Yeah, okay.
I know. You're excited. You're tempted. You're ready for some real doll realness.
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm here for it, but I don't know if I'm ready as you, or at least not as excited as you.
I can't wait. I was like, Tam made me watch Bridesmaids. We're going to watch Lars and the Real Girl.
Hateful. Hateful.
Love you. Kisses. Well, if you have anything you'd like to say about the Free to Be You and Me, free to be you and me. yeah. I'm just being me right there, right then. Our theme, March is Going to the Dogs, the amazing movie that is As Good as It Gets, or Verdell, who the movie just should have been called Verdell, is really the truth of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
You can reach out to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or by social media on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
That's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can rate and review us anywhere you listen to your podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by and we bid you adieu with
one dry kiss.
Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time. Woot!
KTEM.
KTAM. KTAM.
Wait, did I say TEM?
Yeah.
I don't know my own name. I don't know what I've been doing the last 20 years. Too many drugs in the 90s. Damn it.
I know. Give Carol a ride, but she is done with Melvin. Let me do that again and not yawn during it. Excuse me. She tells him, oh, now you're yawning. I see how it is.
Oh, my God. I was trying to. Damn it.
I yawned in the middle of my own sentence. It's fine.
I know, pot. Hi, I'm Kettle.